Good afternoon and welcome to this, the first of two live election special programmes in which we meet the candidates for the forthcoming House of Keys by-election. I'm Roger Watterson. The voters in Douglas South and Douglas North both go to the polls a week on Thursday, May the 21st. These by-elections have been caused by the elevation to the Legislative Council of former MHK's David Cretney and Bill Henderson. And it's to Douglas North that we turn our attention today. At the 2011 general election, Robert William Henderson was elected with 1,227 votes out of the 2,392 votes cast. That's a total registered number of voters of 4,761, but it made a turnout of 50.4%. Since then, although the population of the Isle of Man has risen to around 85,500, and the number of those registered to vote is now 47,278. That's a drop of 12,500. Whether this will affect the fortunes of today's candidates is hard to say, as traditionally the turnout for by-elections tends to be less. But this will be the last time an election will be held in Douglas North as we know it, a higher turnout is hoped for. The recommendations of the Boundary Commission will take effect for the next general election in September 2016, and the shape and size of the constituency in parts will change. So with that in mind, it's even more important that those of you entitled so to do turn out to vote, a view no doubt shared by our three candidates, to whom even one vote is vitally important this time round. There are three candidates contesting the one vacant House of Keys seat, and all three are with me this afternoon to discuss their personal policies and the political scene in general. They are, in alphabetical order, David Ashford, an independent and Douglas councillor, Mary Booth from the Liberal Vannin Party, and also she's a shipping officer, and Ralph Peake, who's also an independent and a businessman. Well, no doubt they will tell us more about themselves, their background, experience and political philosophy as we develop our discussion during this programme. But first, as is customary with all of Manx Radio's constituency programmes, we shall ask them individually to talk to us without interruption on any topic of their choice for just 2 minutes. We shall then start our discussion and I'll introduce topics mainly taken from their manifestos and the current political scene. And during the course of the conversation, I shall sometimes ask for clarification and justification to what's been said. But it is entirely up to them today what they make of it all. So now let's begin by hearing individually from our North Douglas candidates, and I'll call on them in alphabetical order, which means the first to speak today, welcome to David Ashford.
Thank you, Roger. Well, as a candidate, I bring with me 7 years of established political experience on Douglas Council, and also 2 decades of private sector experience across many key sectors of our economy, such as financial services, insurance, and retail and hospitality. If elected, my established political experience will allow me to hit the ground running from day one, something that I feel is essential given the fact that this is only a maximum 16-month term of office and also the nature of the serious decisions that need to be taken for our island's future over that time. I am a true independent candidate and will be free to represent your views without being tied to any party policy. Equally, if elected, I would judge any proposal on its merits. Doesn't matter to me if it's a Libvan policy, a government policy, or an independent policy. If I agree with it, I would vote for it. If I disagreed with it, I would vote against it. If our island is going to survive and prosper in the modern world, then we need to change, and start that change now. We need to not just grow the economy, but also diversify it, so we are not overly reliant on one or two particular sectors. Also, the cost of living is now having a detrimental effect on people's lives, and there are many now struggling to make ends meet with the endless flow of new charges. Government needs to remember that every pound they take out of our pockets is one less pound for us to spend in the economy. We need a culture change in government, and that change needs to start now, and I believe I can help bring about that change.
Well, thank you, David. Now, let's move on from David to Liberal Vannin's Mary Booth.
Thanks, Roger. Why should you vote for me? The answer is simple. We need change in government on the island and to bring back public trust and confidence to those that make the decisions that affect each and every one of us living here. We need an administration who are willing to listen to the people they represent, and they need to be accountable to the electorate. A vote for Mary Booth is a vote for positive change, as you'll also be voting for Lib Fan and the policies developed with this in mind. Unfortunately, the past 10 years have shown that the independent system does not work. Time and time again, we've seen MHKs elected on promises, and once voted in, they're unable to deliver on these promises. In fact, they become part of Comin, then their manifestos seem to be totally forgotten, as they need to conform to collective responsibility. In the past, when the island was financially better off, this was almost acceptable. However, times have changed, and we're now in austerity. Money needs to be spent wisely and with a clear and justifiable reason. We need reform. I want members of LegCo to be elected by the public. The vote for the Chief Minister needs to be open and transparent so the electorate can see exactly how their representative voted. I believe that collective responsibility should be reformed to include restricting it to those who hold ministerial positions. All processes within government should be open and transparent. That's a given. Taxation and welfare need to work together, and I will push for a Tax and Welfare Commission to start the reform process. We also need to define and eliminate fuel poverty on the island. I find it shameful and embarrassing that we actually need to have food banks. People should not have to choose between heating and food. Change is wanted by the electorate, and a vote for Mary Booth on the 21st of May is a vote for positive change that only Lib Fan can achieve.
Right, thank you. That was Mary Booth. Now the third candidate to speak is independent Ralph Peake.
Good afternoon, Roger. Thank you very much for this opportunity. Yes, I'm Manx, and I've been living in Douglas for the past 17 years, right in the heart of the constituency, and I was raised in Laxey, and I've had my own business for 23 years, so I'm really wanting to bring some business experience to government. I think it's very important that we look at particular issues and look at them in a business way and reach a fair decision. I think our urgent priority is to balance the books. It's very important that we actually create enough income for the country so we can actually pay for our services. An important priority is actually to have pride in our nation. It's a fantastic place to live. We've got great countryside, a great environment, and people are very proud of the island, and we want to get back to that. We want to get back to being proud. We want to work together to be as proud as we can and be more effective and efficient. And that proudness, doing the best we can, encouraging entrepreneurs to actually create the wealth, will actually help get us back into a balanced situation, balance the books, and grow that economy. Growing that economy is what we need to actually pay for our services. So I'm really looking forward to the challenge, and I really do believe that we could get more entrepreneurs involved in government. We can actually then help to balance the books and have a good...
Right, well, the last but not least of our candidates to talk to us was Ralph Peake. Now on to some topics of the day, with all three of our candidates here taking part as and when they wish. But let me first of all turn back to you, Ralph. You've said in your manifesto and your documentation that you were going to provide a stronger voice for Douglas North. Now that's an implication that you thought that the present or previous representation was weak.
No, that's not the way I saw it, Roger. I do believe Douglas is the capital of the Isle of Man, and that is the engine of the Isle of Man. That's where we can have the opportunity to create the most wealth. Mm. And there is 8 MHKs in Douglas, and I think if we can actually work together, we can then create a stronger voice for Douglas. That's exactly what I mean. Douglas really deserves to have a really strong voice for the Isle of Man. The constituency, it's the biggest population. We can then really focus on that and... again, drive that engine to prosperity.
David, you refer to local authority experience, but of course local authorities, as you well know, and Tynwald are two very, very different animals.
Well, let's not forget that Douglas Council actually represents 33% of the population.
But the processes are different.
The processes are very different, but the joy of being on Douglas Council is you actually get to speak and get involved with all levels of government as well. For instance, as Chairman of Housing, I've been speaking to ministers, I've been speaking to those actually high up in the civil service, low down, so you get to know the processes through your involvement day to day with them. That's very, very different to some of the other local authorities. So Douglas is rather unique, and also, of course, it has a lot more workload. So you actually do get to know the government processes inside out.
Do you not think that the thinking might be slightly different? I mean, we have seen local authority people canvassing and indeed serving in Keys who took a long time to shake off the penny rate mentality?
Well, yeah, I mean, it is very, very different thinking, and you do have to adapt. I mean, obviously, if you're in the Keys, you're representing the nation, but you do still have a constituency to represent as well. You have to do what's best for Douglas North, but also actually what's best for the island. Mm. Now, I think I'm capable of doing that. You've interviewed me many times, Roger, on various different shows. As you know, I always like to look at the big picture. And, you know, sometimes I'm actually accused of being a local authority member that takes too big a view.
What extra do you think, Mary, being a party member will bring to your performance if elected?
Well, if I get elected, I go in. I already have two people supporting all the policies that we have. That's a step ahead of these guys. No offence.
Yeah, that is, of course, if the policies are accepted.
If the policies are accepted, we also have Keith standing in Douglas South. If he gets elected, there's four of us there. Mm. We also have a lot of other MHKs in the House who do agree with our policies. They may not be members, but in general, they agree with what we want to do. And David mentioned working with people, and that's what we do with LibFan. We're quite happy to do that and get people on board, because our policies are for the island as a whole. They're there to make the island better for everybody.
But isn't that the case of any member who's elected to the House of Keys? I mean, the oath of office is that they are responsible for the island as a whole. They're elected by a constituency, but then the responsibility is the entire island anyway.
That's correct. Mm.
So, well, you know, there's not a lot. That is part of what any member House of Keys has to do.
Yes, but with party, we need party politics on the island. I truly believe that. And David's sitting here ready to jump in to disagree with me.
I am indeed.
Well, you gave considerable emphasis in your manifesto and indeed in your introductory letter and talk to the fact you are independent. I mean,
yes.
Party politics haven't had any traction for
I think party politics over here, it would not be the right approach at all. You look around the world and all you keep getting from countries such as France, Spain, UK is saying that the party political system's actually broken, that it doesn't work. I know Liv O'Bannon keeps saying, well, we've got all these policies, we can implement them if we get 12, 13 members of the House of Keys. Look at the UK, we've just had an election there in the UK. How many of the party policies that David Cameron has said in this election do many people think he's going to want to over the next 5 years or be able to get through?
But the difference with us, if we were to become the government, we wouldn't just fill it with LibFan members. Obviously, there's going to be other MHKs in the House who have experience in different areas, and we would obviously accept them into government. We're not going to turn around and say, this is a LibFan government, it's all LibFan members.
But it's still a bloc vote. At the end of the day, I mean, Liv O'Bannon complains about the Council of Ministers bloc vote. Mm-hmm. But what they want to do is switch it with another bloc vote, which is the Liv O'Bannon bloc vote.
Yeah, but our bloc vote has been, we'll have a mandate for our bloc vote. People will have voted for it. Well, I actually disagree with bloc vote anyway, but we will have a mandate. People will have voted for our policies. They're not just voting for me, they're voting for the policies I represent. These policies are LibFan policies. Therefore, we have a mandate to do that. Whereas independence, don't get me wrong, it's a nice idea, but it doesn't work. It hasn't worked. We've seen time and time again, MHKs go in on the independent ticket and their policies go out the window.
But can any member of the House of Keys, Ralph, in an election, make a promise to do anything other than try to do his best?
Well, I think, as you've just heard there, I don't think that's the big issue the island's facing, to be honest, the political system. Mm. I think there are massive issues that we need to tackle, and I think we need to look at them in depth, really get to the bottom of it so we can make informed decisions. We do want to look at it, I see it, as a business. We need to find out what the issues are, be transparent with the population. That's what they deserve.
I'm just going to come to that in a minute, because I'm just trying to make it very clear where our discussion is now going to go to, because you too are an independent. So you have no party policies had no attraction for you either, by the sound of it.
No, that's right. I do believe it's a collective group of independents will actually work better together, and we'll get the results that we actually need best for the island.
But that hasn't worked, Ralph. We've seen that.
Well,
the past 5 years.
That's just down to the individuals.
Well, let's move on now, because clearly we beg to differ, but you know where all three of you stand.
Yes.
So let's go a stage further now. I'll just stay with you, Ralph, for a minute. You've said more than once you want to return to a proud nation. I wasn't aware that we weren't a proud nation.
Well, there's a lot of people I've spoke to on the doorstep over the last 4 or 5 weeks, and they have lost faith in the island. They have lost that sense of pride, and I hear that quite often.
So what was the reason they gave?
Well, there's no transparency. They don't feel as though they got the respect, really. And we have to respect people. We have to respect the constituents, and the constituents can then return that respect.
Is there no transparency because they're told there's no transparency, or because they actually know from experience there's no transparency?
we have to be as transparent as possible. We have to bring the electorate along with us, so we have to have a buy-in to whatever the agreement is. If people buy into it...
We don't do that now.
I don't believe people are buying into it now.
I mean, I think, Roger, what I've tended to find is it's not so much about pride as a nation. I think people are proud of the Isle of Man as a nation. But I think there's a feeling out there that government has stopped representing the views of the people. The government has started representing itself. Yeah. And trying to actually focus its views down onto the people. That's what's coming across to me.
Somebody has to take charge, though. The biggest criticism of our government in the past was that there was no, you know, there was nobody at the top. Nobody was the leader.
Yeah, they do, but I mean, sometimes, I mean, I've said it before in interviews, I think the government has been their own worst enemy in some cases. The way they announce things and the way they put them across to people is been pretty abysmal, to be honest. I mean, you only have to look at the farce that we had over the post offices. When it was first announced, even as a councillor and the council was consulted, we actually thought it was going to be one counter at the back of a spa shop. It was only 2 days later when they published the plans that it actually emerged. It was going to be the same floor space that's there now. But they need to explain things better. They need to communicate better. But also they need to listen to what people are saying. People are struggling and you can't keep getting off the escalator and into the lift with charges.
Right, well, you say need to listen to what people are saying. How does a government know what people are saying? They go out and have consultation meetings and the same people go to all of them. I mean, the number of responses to consultations are very low. And very often members of the House of Keys, they're the last person to know from their constituents what people want. So how is that going to happen? That needs to change.
Your MHK should be your first point of contact if you're unhappy with anything. I've said time again, contact me if you're unhappy with anything. I need to know what you want. Yeah. Unless I speak to you, I don't know. As I say, when I meet people on the doorstep, how else am I meant to represent you if I don't meet you?
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, MHKs are a constituency member as well. So they should be in touch with their constituency. They should actually know through regular contact with their constituents what their constituents are saying so that they can actually make a balanced decision.
But you accuse the government of having a short-term approach with always an eye on the next election.
I do, and I think we've seen that for the last couple of House of Keys, and I don't think party politics would help that anymore, because you tend to find with party politics, whichever system you look at, you take an even more short-term approach, especially to the next election and to see whether they're going to get re-elected.
I
think there's a lot of people in the UK that's just had an election that would would disagree with that. But you know, I think that they need to have a 30-year plan. Government needs to be focusing on a 30-year plan. And one of the things I'm very concerned about is that at a time in the next 16 months, after these by-elections are over, when government should actually be pushing forward, making the tough decisions, that they're actually going to take their foot off the pedal.
You had long-term plans in your documentation, Ralph.
Yes, that's correct. It's very important to have a clear vision of where the nation wants to be. And if we do have a 20-year vision, we've got a great opportunity here as an island. We could promote the idea of a circular economy where we actually close that loop, move away from a linear economy where lots of resources are actually dug out of the ground, made into products and then just thrown away. Circular economy would actually be where you actually design better quality products and actually have a service industry on the back of that. On the way to that, we can have a multiplier effect, which if we focus on the local businesses, we can then get up to 68% of every £100 that's invested back into the local economy. If you actually don't support local businesses, it's only a 43% benefit in the economy. So to really, I know we've had shop local, buy local in the past, but I don't think we've had the understanding behind that. And if we can try and get out to the people the understanding of why the benefits of a local economy will actually grow the economy, we can then really get to that balance.
What do you say to the fellow who says, well, it's all very well you telling me that, but I've got a limited income, and if I can get something at half the price on the internet, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, I do appreciate that, and that is a very attractive offer now, but you have to lead by example. So we really do need to have leaders in the House, in government, who will understand fully the benefits of that circular economy.
Well, I think they do, don't they? Wouldn't you say that most people understand that a pound spent here is better than a pound spent in Liverpool?
Well, do they fully understand that? And when it could also, it's consultations or it's reports, it's not just products. You know, there's a lot of reports that are actually placed off-island and then they then try and implement them here. So maybe the politicians then haven't got the full buy-in, or they're not taking responsibility by actually having an external report done. If those reports are actually done here, in-house, you then take responsibility for it, and then you're held accountable.
What you're saying is the consultants are off-island consultants.
Yes, that a number of those.
Have we got the skills here, one might ask? Or maybe we have the skills, but the objectivity.
That's the fantastic opportunity, though, isn't it, to actually improve those skills, to actually use local people to come up with local answers. That is how we're going to benefit. That's how we're going to get out of this together. We need to work together in the Isle of Man to get out of this financial...
I think economically as well, Roger, one of the key things is we need to diversify the economy. The economy is very reliant on several particular sectors, and I find that quite worrying. The Treasury Minister mentioned in his speech one particular sector that now was so much of economic growth. Now, while it might be a
we're
good
talking
thing
about
that...
online gambling.
Well,
here,
we're saying e-gaming. I wasn't going to name the sector, named it now, Roger.
Yeah.
But it's nothing against that particular sector. But when they actually state that it's so much of economic growth... That's worrying, because you become more and more reliant on one particular sector, and if anything goes wrong in that sector, then your economy's shot, basically. You need to actually diversify and go into new industries and invite new industries into the island.
Well, talking about workings of government as well, because I like to deal with industry and bringing new industry in and the workings of government, all three of you. You said, Ralph, that the weight of bureaucracy is crushing the island.
Yes, I do believe that.
Can you give me an example of that?
Well, we have to start by looking at methods of how to improve and make efficient solutions. Kaizen is a Japanese method of actually making continual improvement, and that's basically every day, everybody will, everywhere in that organisation, can make an improvement. And if we have that mindset, and if we want to do that, if we want to get out of this together, we can all make a contribution, small contribution every day. It's the small contributions that will get us into a much better situation.
But you have to rally people to that cause.
That you do, absolutely, Roger, that's exactly right. And that's returning, again, to pride in the Isle of Man. We need to want to do this. And if we want to do that, we'll work hard together to work our way out of this. That is the way, I'm afraid.
Isn't that to a degree what the government is doing now? I mean, it's reduced the deficit enormously. And it's had to cut out $200 million out of its budget, which is not easy in anybody's terms.
Yes, well, that's a great start. It's really getting the message across. The people on the doorstep do not feel as though we are on the right path. They feel as though the government has let them down.
They haven't been taken on board then.
Sorry?
Yeah, they haven't been taken on board. That's
exactly
what you're saying.
Right. They haven't understood that, and so they have to buy in. So we have to have a clear message that everyone does understand to buy in and work together
okay.
to get out of this.
Mary, I'm taking this from your three manifestos here, because on the same subject, Mary, you talk a bit about reform and not improved government effectively, but improved governance. You deal with the whole aspect of the operation of government.
Yes. Mm. We need new governance. We need governance on the island that people respect, that people understand. And we need governance that represents the people, and it doesn't at the moment.
Give me an instance of that. I asked Ralph that question. Can you give me an instance?
LegCo, for example. The whole way it's a farce at the moment. We've seen that the last 2 months. It has just been a farce.
But do you think people are all that interested?
Yes. If you go on any social media, if you talk on the doors, people are interested in it. People want change. People are disgusted with it, to be honest with you. And they do see it. And the right word is farce. People are just... It's a laughing stock.
Okay, so what do we do then? There's more to governance than the Legislative Council.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you see that is an essential thing to do? For instance, if elected, what would be one of your priorities in this respect?
My priorities would be the collective responsibility. It should be just to the ministers. David has a point. He stated it as well. And we do agree on this. So, hey. collective responsibility as it stands doesn't work. It really doesn't. As an example David used, an agricultural minister having to agree with the social care doesn't work. You stick within your department and that's fine. Now, we have a member currently in a department who's not signed up to collective responsibility, so it does work.
Right. But the same thing, of course, is that if... forgive me for coming back to the party thing for mm-hmm. a minute, but there is also a fear, isn't there, that if you have a party system as well, which you're suggesting might substitute for this, then the member will really not be allowed to think of himself. He'll have to do as he's told just the same.
No, we're not a three-whip party. No way at all. The policies in the manifesto weren't just developed by Kate or Peter. They were developed by the party as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
We have a core group, 8 to 12 of us. We sit, we work out the policies. We then go out to the membership. There's policies we've put forward they've not agreed with, and they've been taken off the table. It's as simple as that. It's a democratic party. And as an MHK for a constituency, my constituency is the priority. If something comes up that is against my, that will go against Douglas North, I'll vote against it. And my party will be 100% against me. Sorry, not against me. My party will be 100% for me and behind me doing that.
Right, OK.
Because they know that.
Well, David, just to come off the subject a moment.
Can I just say, though, if Liberal Vannon is not going to be a whipped party in the House of Keys, then effectively they're all just a bunch of independents.
But we're not, because they'll be able to vote on these policies together.
I cannot believe that every single member of Liberal Vannon agrees with every single policy of
Liberal
Vannon.
Of course we don't.
Exactly. So when policies come forward, you'll have some members voting against,
some members voting for. These policies that we currently have been agreed on.
So by everyone.
Yes, because that's how we've decided on them.
Of course, that takes you to the issue of what the government and the workings of government cannot be anticipated a week ahead sometimes, never mind years ahead. It's all very well having plans, and they probably are essential, but nevertheless, events change very, very quickly. You know, so there has to be some sort of... Yeah. After all,
We're the first to say, policies, if they need to change, we will tell people beforehand.
David, just before we come off this subject, you've said much the same as the others have said here, except that you said that you want a smaller, smarter government.
I do indeed, Roger. I mean, government has grown exponentially over the last few years. I mean, just as the VAT take increased, you can actually plot it on a graph. The number of people employed by government went similarly up. For instance, I mean, before the VAT crisis, if you look at 99, 2000, the government was employing 6,500 people. Then by 2004-05, they were employing 7,500 people. They were effectively employing 20% of the economically active population in the island. Now, fine when you've got the money coming in to maintain that bureaucracy, but when the money isn't coming in, that's one of the things that they've got to deal
with. Has it not already toned up a bit?
It's gone down a bit, but I mean, you're still looking at government, even on current figures, employing about 16, 17% of the economically active population. And I think also there's too many departments, there's too many ministers. I noticed from Liberal Vannon's manifesto, they're saying there should be collective responsibility amongst the ministers. I'd do it slightly differently. I think there shouldn't be collective responsibility amongst the ministers. I think there should be collective responsibility in the departments. Because if you don't agree with something a department's doing that you're a member of, then resign from it. But if the agriculture minister disagrees with the Home Affairs minister, as Mary quite rightly said, why shouldn't they be able to disagree and vote?
Well, you were talking then about government, and one of the issues that all three of you concentrated on was pensions. Maybe we can leave the state pensions and public pensions aside for a minute. All three of you at the same time thought that the civil service, the public service pensions were out of control, I think was the words that one of you used. What would you do, because there's a difficult situation here with a growing shortfall, and the fund needs topping up by the taxpayer all the time. There's more money goes into the civil service pension scheme very often than it does into some other aspects of the public's facilities. What would you do about it, Ralph?
Well, you've got to actually look at that and actually make it sustainable. At the moment, it's not.
Right.
And we have to adjust that. It was 25 years ago when the private sector stopped final salary pensions. And over the last 2 years, the government has actually still issued 1,500 new ones. So it is unsustainable at the moment. So the big decision is you have to actually look at that and stop it straight away.
Right, so what would you do?
As I say, stop it straight away.
Stop it straight away. Yeah. So it means stop it for new entries?
New entries, that's right. Yeah.
But you carry on the obligation of the old ones?
Yes, and then you'd have to actually...
What would you put in its place? Because it's said that if we don't have proper pension schemes, we won't get the doctors, we won't get the nurses, we won't get all sorts of people.
There are a number of things that are connected with that, you're right, and we do have to look at how to attract people to the island, we have to attract entrepreneurs, we have to attract the right sort of doctors and technicians, etc. And we have to make the package available, but we also need to demonstrate that we can actually balance the books and we are aware of what is going on now. So if that is the deficit, we have to address that. Now in the future, as interest rates go up and investments come in, it can then be reviewed and the actual change in pensions could be reversed. But you have to actually live for what you've got now, and that's the main thing.
What's the Liberal Vannon's policy on that?
Our policy is we want to phase out the existing public sector pension scheme by protecting benefits accrued to date and identify key sector workers such as medical professionals, i.e. we want to keep the medical professionals here, we want to attract new ones. We can't cut down their pension because we won't be competitive. Mm-hmm. So we need to keep that, but we can phase out the public scheme that we have at this moment in time.
Right, so there'd be an argument that's one thing for one person and another for another.
Well, at the end of the day, someone who's a doctor is someone from different sitting at a desk in the civil service.
Mm-hmm. So an unfair comparison, you say?
It is, very right. much so.
Well, I've got to say, Roger, it's one thing for one and one thing for another at the moment. Mm. The police and nurses obviously have a very different scheme. I think they are frontline staff and their pensions do need to be protected. I've been very precise on where I think there should be change. It's a £2.4 billion actuarial deficit on at the moment. I believe that the scheme should be closed to new entrants. For new entrants, it should move to a defined contribution basis. I agree with, I think with Timbal members, it should move to a defined contribution basis as well. I think the changes they've done with the Timbal members' pensions hasn't gone far enough. And then, as I know, sitting as a trustee of the local government scheme, if you tinker even slightly with things like that, then that can bring your actuarial deficit long term down quite quickly. But action needs to be taken in the next 16 months. This is exactly one of the policies I believe this government shouldn't leave to the next in administration. It should be doing in the next 16
months. In parliamentary terms, 16 months is not a long time.
It's not, but considering they've talked about it over the whole 4 years of this term, hopefully they should be in a position to actually move on it quite quickly. And my worry is they won't, because they'll see it as controversial and won't want to upset people ahead of a general election.
Well, the phrase you're saying that we'll hear is that is for the next House to decide.
Well, I think they're completely and utterly wrong if they say that. It's
We've
not
heard
for
it
the
many
next
a time,
house.
That, haven't we?
We have heard it many, many a time. And this is what I talk about, taking the foot off the pedal in the run-up to an election.
Right, well, at this point, we'll take a short commercial break and we'll return for more debate with these candidates in the forthcoming Douglas or North Douglas Keys by-election in 2 minutes.
Local business, Nicola Bowker. Need an accountant? Nicola Bowker. Want accounts you can trust? Nicola Bowker. Whether a sole trader or large company, for your free initial meeting, call Nicola Bowker today on 861 271.
On the 25th of April, Nepal was rocked by its worst earthquake in 80 years. More than 3,000 people are dead and hundreds of thousands fleeing from their homes. DEC member agencies in the area are working around the clock to provide food, shelter, clean water and bedding to ease the suffering of those affected. Please help now by going to the DEC website or calling 0370 60 60 900 to make a donation. Thank you.
Strand Group has moved to a new purpose-built and specially designed HQ at Tremode Estate. Facilities services, secure document management, contract cleaning and commercial refuse collection are all now managed under one roof. The 130-strong team is more efficient than ever and keen to show you around. Come and talk to us about your business needs and we'll show you how Strand Group can help. Call 663913 or get the full story at strandgroup.im.
The Big Wheel Blues Festival at the Villa Marina on the 22nd to the 24th of May. Sponsored by Domicilium, James Osborne Financial Services, Peter Norris Music and Event Services. And supported by the Arts Council with free music stages on Saturday and Sunday. Friday features Doug McLeod, the Kaz Hawkins Band and Mike Sanchez. And Saturday has the Della Grants, Zoe Schwartz and Blue Commotion and Chris Jaggers at you. Tickets just £22.50 per night from VillaGaiety.com. The Big Wheel Blues Festival in association with Manx Radio.
Look out for the new part-time course guide arriving in your letterbox soon from the Isle of Man College of Further and Higher Education. Tax accounting to sequence dancing, a degree in computing or landscape painting. We've something for you. The Isle of Man College, putting your future on the right course.
Independent businessman Ralph Peake, Liberal Vannon's Mary Booth and Independent Douglas councillor David Ashford are our studio guests today in this edition of Election Special, in which we're discussing their political views and ambitions and the political scene in general. And we went to the news there with discussion on pensions. That was public service pensions, but the other pension is there, the state pension. Now, there's three or four different types of attitude coming from the three of you. You're, first of all, David, saying that you think the pension should be inflation-linked.
I do indeed. I think that's very, very important.
Well, what would you do with it was flatlined at the moment?
Well, obviously, I think, well, actually, Roger, in fact, if you actually look back over the last 10 years and you index the state pension against inflation, the inflation has risen in the last 10 years 42.55% and the pension's risen 41.26%. So it's actually 1.26% is the actual difference. So it's not a huge difference that people sometimes think it is to actually make it inflation linked. But in some years you get massively over inflation increases, and other years you have below inflation increases in it. I think that should be levelled out, and the state pension should be linked to inflation. We've also got to remember that those over 65 are actually quite high spenders in our economy, and also save the economy money in other ways, as carers and other forms of actual tasks that they undertake. There was a report by Age UK into the over 65 population in the UK that showed that they give £37 billion worth of investment to the UK economy each year. I can't believe it's much different, although obviously on a smaller scale, on the island. I think they are high spenders in the economy, and I think if we start curtailing the actual income that they have there, it's going to cause problems. And I also think, to be honest, they've paid into the system their whole life. They deserve to have dignity in retirement.
Well, Ralph, you've gone the other way. You've suggested that the pension supplement, the Manx pension supplement, which is not part of the UK pension, should be protected.
Yes, I agree with that.
Yeah. But how are we going to do that under the reciprocal arrangement with the UK if they go in for a flat pension?
Well, it's important that excuse me. It's important that the pensioners who have paid in and worked hard all their lives here in the Isle of Man are actually benefited from the Manx supplement.
But the pension supplement, the fund for that, doesn't come out of that, does it? It's an additional amount contributed by government.
Yes, that's correct. Yes, and so I support that.
Yes, but what I'm trying to get at is, you know that there's plans at the moment that we may follow the UK's plan to have a flat pension of whatever it is, 140, 100 something pounds a week, whatever the figure was. And if that were to happen, that the pension supplement would be absorbed in that and there wouldn't be such a thing.
That's true, but at the moment we've got the pension supplement for Manx people who have paid into the system, and I would like to continue with that.
Okay, well, Mary...
Roger, perhaps the answer, though, Roger, is... If the supplement's merged in, you've got to make sure it's a proper merge in, and the level that's paid out does not go down for pensioners. Yeah. So it's a proper merge in, so it's then in with the supplement.
Yeah, we believe the basic pension should be sufficient to provide an acceptable standard of living.
Yeah.
Now, well, I was going to ask you about that, because what do you call an acceptable standard of living?
Well, people shouldn't have to struggle between eating.
Can you quantify it?
Well, at this moment in time, it would probably be about £180 to £200 per week.
And where would, bearing in mind that the fund, the system, as the actual people have warned government, is the slowdown or the emptying of the pot is accelerating. There's now more going out than going in, and it's getting worse. So how would you justify adding additional expense to that?
Well, that's where the means testing comes into play. We want means testing. We want proper means testing.
For pension too?
It would be for the pension supplement. The Manx supplement. The basic pension everyone's entitled to. You've paid in for it.
Right.
So you have the supplement above that. If you're earning, your pension comes in at £40,000 a year. You don't need the Manx supplement, so you don't. I'd rather use those funds for people who don't have the £40,000 plus pensions. So they have a decent standard of living.
Roger, can I just jump into something you just mentioned there about consultants talking about the National Insurance Fund and it going down? Some very interesting answers given in the House of Keys and Tynwald to questions that have been asked by Chris Thomas and several other MHKs. One of the reasons the National Insurance Fund is going down is because of all the other charges that are being piled into the National Insurance Fund. Obviously, I think it's the Social Security Act in the UK that is also applies to the island. It states what they can actually be charged to the National Insurance Fund. The National Insurance Fund, as far as I'm concerned, is there for one reason only. It's actually to be able to provide the state pension and other benefits. It shouldn't be having all these other things charged to the National Insurance Fund. A lot of people still remember, and I've had it many times on the doorstep, how the National Insurance Fund was, and people on the doorstep are saying this, robbed is the word they're using, to pay for the hospital with a promise that it'd be paid back in, and it never has been.
Well, that, of course, happened during one of your predecessors' times in Douglas North, who was the minister at the time who did that.
To be honest, I think the minister at the time, I feel quite sorry for him. I think he was hung out to dry by his then colleagues.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, let's move on from pensions then to business and government, Ralph. What is a circular economy, which you referred to in your manifesto?
Yes, circular economy is where you actually close that loop of actually producing things to then throw away. So it's actually producing things that will actually be reused, recycled, and actually close that loop so you can actually reuse them again, and that then will create a lot more service-related jobs as well to actually keep products moving, keep the whole life of the product to extend it.
But these are products for use in the Isle of Man or products for use everywhere?
Products for use in the Isle of Man.
Right. So can you give me an example of what you mean?
Well, if, for instance, if you're looking, say, a vacuum cleaner, rather than actually buying a vacuum cleaner, you actually engage in a contract to actually keep the carpets clean, because that's actually what you actually want. You don't necessarily want a vacuum cleaner, you actually want your carpets clean. So it's that service contract you could enter into.
So we're back to the days of Clucas's Laundry, are we, where the man used to turn up in a van with a parcel with brown paper and string?
It could be like that, yes.
But do you really think that's workable?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's one of those things that we have to. We know that resources are finite, and we at the moment we're actually just reusing them. So,
okay, yeah. Use your example of the vacuum cleaner.
Yeah,
I'm not going to wait for someone to come out for my floors to be cleaned. I'll just grab the Hoover and Hoover it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I mean, I must confess, I'm in as dreadful with housework as I am. Even I wouldn't pay for someone else to come in and do it.
Mm-hmm. It's a different mindset, and it's something that we've moved away from actually a consumer product to actually then have a service.
But I don't understand why people would pay for a service out of their income, which is already limited, and we've already been talking about the cost of living, to actually bring someone else in to do something they can do themselves.
Yeah, well, this is a new idea and it's a new concept, and the idea it'll be in the future, so we're actually working towards that.
Right, well, let's go to you then, David. You're suggesting that we should make it very clear we're open for UK business. Now, aren't we already? Aren't we doing
that? No, I think we've actually lowered our head below the parapet over the last 5 to 10 years. Maybe quite rightly at the time. Obviously, we had the VAT crisis. We had the health agreement and the UK government looking at us quite closely. We had a very unfriendly government in office under Mr. Brown at that time. We've been very good at going further abroad to China. And maybe long term that will pay off. But we also need to look at how we can grow the economy short term. And I believe the sectors of business in the UK that are struggling at the moment, they've still got quite a high corporate tax rate in the UK, there's other issues, they're still trying to sort out their economy, that we should be marketing ourselves to. And I've given some examples of that, such as research and development. I think we would be ideal for that sort of industry. There's other examples as well. There's the advancements in agrobots. As an agricultural sector, we should be looking to try and bring some of that technology in. We've got home healthcare that's a growing innovative industry in the UK that we should be looking to try and bring over here, especially since we say we've got an ageing population. And eco-businesses as well. I think there's a huge market that we can tap into. That although we're a small island geographically, we've got a vast array of industries here that
we can
promote.
Who's going to do that?
Well, I think it needs to be the Department of Economic Development. When economic development was created, I was quite hopeful that as a department, it would start bringing industries in. To my mind, it's just become yet another government department focusing on the day-to-day.
Isn't that what you're saying in your manifesto, Mary? Government to create the right environment to allow business to grow?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, I put the same question to you. Says, are they really doing that already? I mean, David's just talked about trips to China, all sorts of activities to create business externally.
They are, and we want to continue what they're doing. People think Lib Fan are naysayers to this government. We're not. We give them credit where it's due. And what they're doing at this moment in time, we have no complaints about. We just want to continue that and make it grow.
Now, at the last general election, and the general election before last, one of the major issues that came up on the agenda, virtually in every constituency, was immigration and population control. What's your view on that, Mary?
I agree with the work permit system. We need to keep it.
Do you think that's effective enough?
I do think it is. It needs to be a little bit stricter, so it does. But other than that, I think it's fine on the island. I speak as someone who's a come over and a stopover.
Okay, but how does that affect that affects the people working? But it doesn't, and there's a whole series of categories that are exempt now. But it does not necessarily affect the arrival of dependents, does it?
It doesn't. But if you have someone who's working, they're paying into the system. Therefore, their family is. The family is being paid for by the person paying into the system. We don't have the same problems the UK have, so we don't. It really is a case of we don't get full extended families coming over. We don't. Right. There might be one or two, but seriously, in the broad scheme of things, it's really not a massive issue.
What do you make of it, Ralph?
Well, people are the attraction we need to get here. It's not the business, it's actually a person. An entrepreneur, that's the type of person who would actually create wealth. We can then get the right people here, we can then create that wealth and use that for our services. So making it attractive. We've got a great environment here, getting the right attitude, encouraging people to take that chance, take that risk to start a business, employ people. That is the future.
And what about you, David?
I think the work permit system needs an overhaul. I think it was fit for the time when it was introduced, but I think it needs to again be looked at. I think there needs to be a balance between getting the entrepreneurs in, which we do need on the island, but also ensuring that those coming here actually are appropriate for the job and sector that they are coming to work in. In fact, in many cases, especially if they're moving into the island for the purpose of work, we should be looking, do they already have a job in place to actually be coming in with?
Well, now, we're getting close to the end of this programme, so if I could ask you, all of you, just two questions, and each one of them, perhaps, I could ask you to give me a 20-second or thereabouts answer to it. The first one, if I can go to you, David, is, and if you had to choose, what would be the one issue you would focus your attention on and effort in the short time at your disposal before the next election?
I've already named it. I think in the 16 months, the public sector pension deficit needs to be tackled before a new administration. Let's not have the usual, as you said, Roger, of that's for the new house.
Okay, Mary?
Yeah, I agree. Actually, the same as David. It would be the pension system.
Right. We have to balance the books. So that is looking at the outgoing and ingoing. It is looking at the pensions and it is looking at growing the economy.
Right, now, take a slightly bit longer on this, but to end today's programme, I'm going to ask all of you, within half a minute or so, to tell the voters of Douglas North why on the 21st of this month they should invest their one vote in you. Well, as you came in last at the start, Ralph, would you like to start now?
Thank you very much.
Go ahead.
I do see a clear difference, actually, in myself and the two other candidates. I certainly will be looking forward to actually work with people, try and get everybody to work together to work us out of this economy. That is the way. I'm not that interested in political issues. The big thing is actually getting us back on our feet and working together to be a proud nation once more.
And why should they vote for you?
Because it's that difference. I'm focused on the economy, I'm focused on people, how we can actually get people to work together to actually work us out of this issue we're in at the moment.
And you don't think that's being done already?
It's just a better way of doing it. It's getting a group of people together in MHKs, group of people together to actually lead by example and actually show how it can be done in a better way, and that's what can be improved, and I'm certainly for that.
Why should the citizens of Douglas North vote for you, Mary?
Basically, I'm just like them. I just want the best for my family, is the bottom line. Talking to the people, we have the same issues with government and we want the same changes. We want reform. We want government to be accountable. Mm-hmm. So we do. People are just like me, they're being squeezed. Disposable incomes are shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. How are we meant to grow the economy if that's happening? We can't. People need someone like me in government to represent them because I'm just like them.
Right, and to finish off, David.
Well, Roger, I have 7 years political experience, 20 years private sector experience. So as a candidate, I believe I bring with me the best of both worlds. If I was elected, I'd be a hardworking constituency member. They'll never lose sight of the people who elected me in the first place. With me, as people know who've had me as their councillor for many years, what you see is what you get. I won't compromise what I believe for short-term political gain. It was 152 years ago that Abraham Lincoln said, government of the people, by the people, for the people. I think that our government has lost sight of that, and that's what we need to get back to. And if I'm elected, that's what I'll be arguing for from day one.
Well, no doubt the individual manifestos from all three of our candidates will be dropping through your letterbox during the next few days for you to consider, alongside their comments on today's programme. But there we end this edition of Election Special, in which the three candidates in the forthcoming Douglas North by-election were our studio guests, and they were David Ashford, Mary Booth and Ralph Peake. Douglas North goes to the polls on Thursday the 21st of May, and you might be interested to know the three polling stations are at Williston Methodist Church, Cronkybury School and Project 21 Centre. And they're all open from 8 in the morning till 8 at night. Now, if you missed part or off or would like to hear again what was said in today's election special, you may do so on Manx Radio's website. That's www.manxradio.com in the Listen Again section for Sunday. For further information about this election, and it also may be found on Manx Radio's website in the section entitled By-Election. Next week's programme, at the same time, will feature Douglas South. Today's producer was Catherine Nicol, and I'm Roger Watterson.